Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Thank you for joining us today and welcome. This is an hour devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we think as we do. An hour for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas behind what we think we know, who we are, and who we might become. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner, Ravinder, waits you there now. You can log on by going to eldontaylor.com/chat. So, Ravinder, say hello to the folks and let us all know what's happening in the chat room today. And it might be a good idea to remind everyone who listens at a later date how they can view the chat and join the after chat as well.
Yes, sir. I'd be happy to do that. Yes, do come join us. It's eldontaylor.com/chat. Don't forget the /chat. Come in, come and say hello. We have a wonderful group of people. In fact, Eldon's guest today is one of our regular people in the chat room. So you enjoy her on the air. She's always in the chat room and always handing out the most wonderful advice. And as Eldon said, you can always go back to the chat room afterwards and replay the chat room. Just go to eldontaylor.com/chat, click on the box. It's up there for a full week afterwards. So come join us, eldontaylor.com/chat.
All right. Now, a couple of points of business before we continue. First, we just received our copy of The Mystic Cookbook by Denise and Meadow Lynn. It's a truly unique cookbook. I mean, I'm not a cookbook reader, but this is not just about recipes, although there are some really great ones in it. It's even perhaps more about spirituality. It's about the energy that goes into cooking for those you love, including yourself. Rav, what would you say about The Mystic Cookbook?
Well, I am a cookbook reader. I have a huge collection of cookbooks, and this one surprised me because, you know, it does have recipes in there. Most of the recipes are actually pretty simple. Not simple as in, you know, simple, but as in easy to put together. They don't take exotic ingredients or anything like that. But what makes this book so special is it's, rather than just being a cookbook, it's how to bring spirituality into your kitchen. You know, we all are too busy all the time, and it's hard to find time to meditate and focus and do all of those things we should be doing because we have all of those things we have to do, like doing the dishes and cooking and all of that stuff. Well, she takes the whole process, and you can make every time you're in the kitchen a spiritual experience. It's a great way to be centered and get your work done at the same time. So I highly recommend it. Plus the fact that it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. You will just love it. Absolutely love it.
Really is. Full color. It is a beautiful book.
It's full color.
Great book. All right. Second order of matters. And this one at this time, because we so often get involved and come the end of the show, well, we're racing out to avoid the computer from cutting us off in mid-sentence. So this is our last live broadcast of 2012. We want to wish each and every one of you all the very best holiday season ever. We consider it an honor that you bring us into your homes and hearts every week. We genuinely appreciate the opportunity to explore with you the myriad of insights that honest inquiry can shed light upon. We cherish our relationship and hope you find Provocative Enlightenment to be at the very top of your list for favorite shows. Rev, would you like to add anything to that?
It's my favorite show. I love being here, and I really enjoy the guests that you have on. The guest you had last week just was absolutely phenomenal. So it's my favorite show.
I love the guests. I love the audience, and I love the feedback and the opportunity to share some of their letters. And sometimes, you know, they don't like what we do. I'm going to share one of those today. But, you know, that's how we all learn and grow. Okay, every week I read some of your letters. Speaking of letters, is our way of respecting the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our show featured Dan Ariely, and we discussed the honest truth about dishonesty and irrational predictability. Professor Ariely offered many examples from studies of how we find, quote, you know, the fudge limit, close quote, for our cheating and lying and thereby maintain some sense of respectability, at least in our own minds. He noted the influence of our peers and of society in general, the function of rationalization, and concluded that we may find dishonest acts to be acceptable simply because everyone around us is doing so. Now, Ravinder and I have discussed this one recently in a very real context. We've been seeking a good housekeeper since we learned that our last would not provide her Social Security number for our tax records. It seems she was also collecting disability from workman's compensation. Now, she was, in Ravinder's words, probably the best housekeeper we have ever had. So we set out to find another one. Ravinder has talked to several, and the common story goes like this. We like to be paid under the table. Okay, is this a new cultural norm rising up due to tough times? I mean, is this really dishonest after all? Well, you decide. I used to instruct subjects before I administered a lie detection examination that the truth knows no percentages. It either is or is not. Telling me you're mostly honest, 99% honest, or honest 99% of the time, is somewhat akin to telling me your spouse is 99% faithful. At some level, there's a great disappointment in that deduction. Another thing, if you have read my book, I Believe, then you know the payoff that comes with genuine integrity, among which includes that your health is actually improved, both physical and mental, when you simply tell the truth. Perhaps we just have less stress in our lives when we're not maintaining some rationalization of dishonesty. That's probably why the old proverb, oh, what a web we weave when once we practice to deceive. Okay, John wrote, I loved your show with Professor Ariely. I would love to be doing just what he is doing. He is in possession of so many interesting facts. Well, John Getty's books, they are really worth a read, I promise. Samantha wrote, well, I did not find your show with Dan Ariely particularly uplifting or inspiring.
Uh-oh.
He basically informed us that we are all liars. How does that belong on Hay House Radio? All right. Now, there's a good one for you, Rav. And, you know, you and I have addressed this one as well. Do we tell them the truth or do we tell them what they want to hear? That is Samantha's question to me in a nutshell. My question, Samantha, and I don't mean to be rude, is simply, how do you grow spiritually in denial of the truth? You know, another question I used to use as a control question during during lie detection testing was this. Have you ever lied to someone who trusted you? Now, believe it or not, sometimes a person would actually answer that question, insisting they had never lied to anyone who trusted them. They never lied to their mom or their dad or anyone, you know. No white lies, no stretches of the truth, and so forth. You can count on this. No one who ever told me that nonsense ever passed the examination. So the simple fact is we all tend to lie. You can call it something else if you choose, but the hard data shows that the average person lies much more than they may think. In fact, according to Robert Feldman, a psychologist at the University of Massachusetts, there are 3 lies for every 10 minutes of conversation. Now, this isn't conjecture. This is based on analysis of data, even when subjects knew they were being recorded and monitored for prefabricating, you know, for fabricating information. Okay, all right. For me, true spirituality is not about what sounds good or what I want to hear. It is rather about wrestling with what is. I think once we accept that our rivers of life are not that much different than Siddhartha's, in the Hermann Hesse novel by the same name, we will come to understand that when we find the truth of our being, we find the truth of it all. You have anything you want to add to that one, Rev?
I totally agree with you. The fact is, you have to be able to look at yourself honestly in order to figure out in what direction you want to grow. If you've just got your head in the sand, well, you know, perhaps you were brought up strict Catholic and you've escaped that, and, you know, but you've just got your head in a different sand. That's all.
Amen. Okay, moving on. Mark wrote, I enjoyed today's show. I'm always amazed at how each person's behavior varies in a group setting versus all alone without any direct or tacit influence by the group. Loretta wrote, as always, the show provided me with much insight into myself, and it is something we condition ourselves not to accept, that is deceit to others or ourselves. Jane wrote, I love your Hay House radio show. It's always so interesting and thought-provoking. Paul wrote, I wish you would write a book called I Could Talk You Into Anything. If it wasn't for your books and not turning on the TV anymore, I'd still be believing and buying everything. Well, you know, Paul, I have one contracted with Hay House for 2014. It's called Gotcha. It's precisely about this subject, so I hope you'll stay tuned and get a copy. Dale wrote, I just wanted to drop you a note and tell you thanks for changing my life. Several months ago, a friend loaned me a copy of My Voice Will Go With You, The Teaching Tales of Milton Erickson, a great book, by the way. This started my search for more information, which led me to your book, Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology, and the book I am reading now by you, Mind Programming. The first thing I did was cancel my Dish Network. I got XM radio for my home, which I use for the music and sports. I stream Netflix for the movies that I choose to watch. I can't tell you the last time I read a book where I actually took notes. You are right on the money. So many people buy a self-help book, and after reading, they think it will make them rich or change their life. This is a lifelong obligation to change my thinking and make sure I am on guard not to let my mind be programmed by garbage. I use an e-reader for my books, which I like very much. I have downloaded your MP3 files on self-hypnosis, and they work very well, and have given me the knowledge to perfect self-hypnosis on myself. I have found that I can induce self-hypnosis on myself now in a very short period of time. And last but not least, I'm going to download your two-hour audio talk on self-hypnosis and subliminal technology. Thanks again. You're a wonderful teacher and friend. Now, I love it. That's a great letter. I love it, Dale. Congratulations on emancipation from that old TV programming. From the gomboos coming to the town, and so on and so forth. And keep up the marvelous gains in your life, my friend. What do you think of that one, Rav?
Totally agree with you. Always do, though.
All right, Linda wrote, I come from a very abusive background, and so over the years I have had to deal with a lot of negative voices in my head and depression that I didn't even recognize as being depression. I read some of your books and liked them, so I thought, you know, why not try the disc? I was surprised. After my brain fought them for about a week, the messages started to sink in. I found myself smiling and looking at things in a much more positive way. Then I noticed a few other things. I caught myself smiling for no reason, and I realized that I wasn't thinking negative, self-condemning thoughts anymore. So thank you, Eldon. You did good. I like that. You did good. Well, thank you, Linda. You did good as well. You know, when she talks about resisting the void, you know, resisting it, how did she put it? When her mind was, her brain fought them. That's what she said for about a week. You know what that reminds me of? Number of people that'll get a program like yourself and they hate the music or it gives them a headache the first day or two. You know, we all have that resistance within ourselves, but congratulations. You did good, Linda. I want to say well, but I like good. Okay, I'll take good. All right. That's all the time we have for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to Eldon@EldonTaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming. And once again, I both appreciate and thank you for your feedback and continued support. Now to today's show, the connection between imagination, creativity, and intuition with one of my favorites, Elaine Clayton. Elaine has been with us before, but for those of you unfamiliar with her, she is an artist, author, intuitive reader, and Reiki master. She is the author of Illuminera Intuitive Journal, a working journal with 40 image cards that supports the development of intuitive intelligence through visual imagery and personal unconscious memory. Her new book on intuition is Making Marks, and it's due out in 2014 from Simon & Schuster. Elaine is also an author and illustrator of books for children, including a series by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Jane Smiley and Gregory Maguire. Elaine is a former teacher and continues to teach in libraries, schools, and museums, using drawings as a pathway to empathic and creative intuitive learning. You can learn more about Elaine at her open sketchbook blog, Illuminara, Illuminara.com. She practices intuitive readings in New York City and Connecticut, where she lives with her family. And she will demonstrate today by taking your calls. So let's get her in here. Welcome back to Provocative Enlightenment, Elaine Clayton.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's always our pleasure. I love you. I love your work. You know that.
Well,
now,
I
you listen to the
too.
Show all the time. And you're often in our chat room, as Ravinder said. So you know what my new question of every guest is. You've had some time to think about it.
I forgot what the new question is.
Oh, you did?
How did I do that? I don't know.
Well, that's all right. We'll catch you by surprise then.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to ask you, what is your song of life, Elaine?
Oh, of course. Of course. I love that question. And I do remember now, of course. I think my song of life is drawing. I really do. And it depends on when you ask me that, because I think...
Is there a song called Drawing?
Well, I think drawing is a song. I actually sing while I'm drawing. But if you mean literally, you know, what's my favorite song?
Yeah, I mean literally. What is your song of life? You know, Dee Wallace and I had this conversation, and in the conversation... You know, Dee was basically pointing out that we should all have a song of life, you know, and hopefully it's not one of those songs that comes from down in Tennessee, you know, about the train ran over my dog,
life sucks.
And then I die.
No, a song for me, I make up songs a lot in my mind, and I sort of make up, you know, I sing different words, you know, according to, it's almost like prayers. So I'm trying to think really right this moment, what would I say is my favorite song? I think Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace. Okay.
Yep, I think
that's your song of life, Amazing Grace.
It sort of says it all. It's joyful, but it sort of, you know, isn't afraid to grab the sorrow that teaches us as we live and learn from our mistakes. And, you know, it's just a very beautiful song. And I try to sing it without going off key.
Do you want to sing a piece for us right now?
Oh, I don't know if I would want to do that to your listeners.
Well, that was kind of unfair.
I have performance anxiety, so I don't think I would do very well with that.
I have a CD I'll send to you for that one. So next time you're on the air, you can sing a chord or two. How's that?
Okay, I'll try to get myself ready for doing that.
All right, let's begin our discussion today with your drawings, your intuitive stream drawings. And I know your new book, you know, is directed this way, but your blog covers a lot of this. I mean, you've actually done one of these intuitive drawings for me, and I was quite surprised at how accurately you described many events in my life. So let's begin there. What is it you do? And how do you do it?
Okay, well, what happened is, I'll just tell you the first time I realized this was going to be a method. I had a reading scheduled, and I'm in my studio where I draw, you know, and read. And I don't know what it was, but I just had to draw while I meditated prior to the reading. I don't know what made me do it. I just did it. I closed my eyes. I said a prayer. That's how I do it. I closed my eyes, and I drew. And when I opened my eyes, I looked into the drawing. Really, I call that gazing, the gaze. I gazed at it, and imagery started to talk to me from the marks I had made. And I thought, this is crazy because, you know, it looked to me almost like, at the top of the drawing, like there was a grandmother. It just looked to me like a grandmother, but she had only one leg. And I thought, how am I going to say this to this person? You know, I see a grandmother with one leg. But I decided to go for it. You know, I just decided to trust what came. So when the person called, you know, I said, I told her what I had done and that I had drawn this thing, and I wanted to tell her what I saw in it. And I asked her if she had a grandmother who lost a leg, and she said yes. When she was in the hospital for some kind of heart problem, they had to take her leg away. And I knew then that this was something I had to explore more. So basically what the process is someone will ask me to do a reading, and we'll schedule it, you know, via email or whatever. And then prior to the reading, about a half an hour, at least a half an hour before the reading begins, I will go into meditation, and, you know, I ask for the ability to make marks that will best help and support this person on their journey, and I also ask for the support in interpreting it, because I learn, too, as I go. Each reading teaches me something else as well. So, and you know, interpreting imagery is very subjective, so I increasingly really care more about actually what the client's impression would be about the drawing, and hopefully we'll be able to make it so that everyone can see the drawing during the reading. But I meditate for half an hour, and I just simply trust what comes, and I write it down. And sometimes they're really like reading a dream. You know, if you have a dream, you wake up, and they're multidimensional. They'll teach you. A dream will offer you constantly in new ways if you keep going back to it. So you might say, wow, I had that dream. So let's do the Freudian, you know, interpretation, or let's do a Jungian, or, you know, what does it mean to me personally, this dream? What's symbolic or archetypal about it? Maybe I had this dream because I ate something weird, you know. You can do all of those things, right? You can do all of that with the drawing, too. And I never feel that I'm perfect at interpreting. I always feel like there's room for me to learn. But that's what happens in the reading. At the very beginning of the reading, I will describe what I see. And then, you know, the rest of the reading takes place. It actually becomes the introduction into whatever it is the person most wants to go into.
So when you finish the reading, you have a drawing, and some of these readings you don't do in person. So you follow that up by sending a drawing.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dad, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I don't always send them because I haven't developed exactly how the book actually that I'm doing, which is helping me understand how best to use this method and to teach it. I think everyone could close their eyes and draw and then be able to say what it means to them. I did that for you. I showed you what it was I was seeing. And I think I showed you at least two different ways, because I read them four ways. So
you did.
Two ways are kind of like timelines, because we do learn in increments of time. You know, we have past, present, future, or at least that's what we feel we have here. But I also think of it as life experience, you know, just life experience, not necessarily always about time. And then the other two ways are chakra charts. So I turn the drawing to see how they talk to me in all directions. So chakra charts, meaning from head to toe, how the body sort of gives us signals or where we store certain emotions and energy. And that's a very kind of important aspect to the drawings, too, because I almost every intuitive stream drawing has an inner child, at least one. And I realized that, you know, like you bring this up in your new book, Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology, how powerful our memories are. You know, we don't always know. We're not always conscious of everything that has had an impact on us, and we're not always ready to know or to
remember. Have to stop you there. We'll pick it up when we come back from the break. We're speaking with Elaine Clayton about the connection between imagination, creativity, and intuition. The website is ElaineClayton.com. That's ElaineClayton.com. Stay tuned. We'll take your calls after the break.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, we're discussing the connection between imagination, creativity, and intuition with author Elaine Clayton. But before we get back to the show, I want to invite you to join me on Facebook. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies. And from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. I also want to remind you to be sure and register to receive my free newsletter when you visit my site and get your free MP3. All right, let's get back to the show. Elaine, before the break, I mean, you were explaining how drawing opens up your intuitive abilities. Mm-hmm. Your book actually teaches that. Flesh that out for us, would you?
Okay, well, you know, I think that a lot of times when you say, if I were to say, hey, drawing is a way to access a feeling of well-being, a lot of people might say they brace up because their impression of drawing is about rendering and maybe being told how to do it when they were young so that there became some fear around it or discomfort. And what I'm trying to share is that when I draw, you know, ever since I was young, and when I was a teacher of young children, you know, 5 and 6 year olds in particular, when they start to draw, they go into this realm that you can just see the enchantment on their faces, and they relax, and, you know, making those marks, you know, into dreams that they want to explore actually becomes real, very real. And so what I realized for myself is that, wait a minute, when I'm doing an intuitive reading or doing a drawing like that where I just sort of let my imagination go, I'm feeling the same feeling. And it's this feeling of enchantment and like you're on the brink of the place where everything good is possible. You know, you're not stuck anywhere. You're not afraid. You're actually doing what I think we were born to do, which is make our mark. You are in the process of being who you really are, which is a creative source of power, you know, real, true energy that is about beautiful, creative gestures. And just the smallest mark really reinforces that, you know, here we are, you're here, and you can make a mark. And no matter what we do, we are making marks, you know, whether we're conscious of it or not, because, you know, we have free will, and pretty much moment by moment, we decide how to handle things as they come.
Right, and but so, now, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and so I think that the intuitive aspect, the inner knowing and the inner calm is creative life force energy, and that which gets expressed through drawing. So to me, it's all sort of in the same realm. Imagination is there, you know, it's all there.
So my question is, were you doing intuitive readings before you did the sketching, or were you doing the sketching, and did that lead to your intuitive readings?
Oh, well, okay, well, I had been doing intuitive readings for a very long time before actually, you know, using drawing as a tool to consciously become intuitive. What I had done as a child was unconscious. I just gravitated to the table in the middle of a room and would draw. And I'm one of seven. So, and my mom made a beautiful, happy home, you know, in so many ways. And yet there are seven children, so there's a lot of, you know, chaos, and you've got the multi-age activities and all that. And my way of being well and feeling good as a child, just almost like an instinct, you know, a reaction that just I didn't have to think about, I would just do it automatically, was to sit and draw. And I loved drawing people. I was always drawing people, making up people and all their little belongings. And, you know, I just love people. So as I got older, then I became conscious of what all of this means. That, you know, you go to art school and you become, you know, you're not doing, it's not really the same as art therapy where you're not aware necessarily of what you're making or you're analyzing if you're the therapist. Someone else is art, but art school is all about, you know, developing a visual language and being very conscious of what your marks mean or how they might be received. So, you know, I've just spent years really kind of in that. But then the other thing that I love so much is people and how we develop and what, why do we get stuck? Why do we feel hurt? And how do we heal ourselves? That's my main interest. So I guess it was sort of natural for it to all come together.
So you were a reader before you incorporated the art. What started you? I mean, do you consider yourself to be a psychic, Elaine?
Well, you know, I think I have psychic experiences, but I don't always love that word, psychic. I don't know why. Maybe it's not fair. It's just not my favorite word. But yes, I mean, I would say that often what happens in readings, which I think of as intuitive, because then it doesn't make it about necessarily about me being amazing. It's sort of a process more.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I love that when I'm correct or when, you know, it's not just general or metaphorical or, you know, sort of archetypal, but it's actually a psychic thing that I could not have known. I think I love that because it makes me feel like there is a God, you know, and how do we know this? Or what is our, how are we able to do these things? It makes it more fun and exciting to do these readings and to engage with people. But I prefer the word intuition and intuitive, I think. But words don't matter that much, I guess. It's okay, whatever works.
Well, when you did readings for us the last time on the air, I believe that was the first time you'd ever done something on the radio. Were you sketching all the time, or were
no? What you mean when I was on your show and
yes.
Someone called? No, because I just use other tools as well. And I was at that time I had just been doing a lot of what they call psychic fairs. You know, where you have 10 or 20 minutes with someone and you use mm-hmm. cards and things like that. I mean, the thing is, visual imagery is everywhere around us, right? So it could be tea leaves, it could be cards, it could be the clouds or the way the branches come together or something you saw that you saw the exact same thing a minute ago, so it talks to you. I just think that our unconscious is being activated a lot. Our eternal, you know, intuitive core is being activated a lot by sensory input all the time. And when we get conscious of what is being talked, you know, or what we're being told, then we find meaning, you know, in all kinds of things, and we don't get stuck in what, you know, we want our lives to be. But yes, to answer your question, I didn't draw for that, but rather if the person, and I actually drew after for the caller, I drew for her then because I meditate for a half an hour to read the drawing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that caller got to have a full reading after that because it was only a little soundbite on the radio.
Right.
Now,
the pictorial work that you're doing, I mean, there are many that would argue, have argued, that it is more than archetypal, that indeed it is the primitive language.
Mm-hmm.
Princeton scholar Julian Jaynes, in his book, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind, set forward a hypothesis that many people have adopted. I mean, it's not far out to understand that there was a time that early civilization organized itself in almost a telepathic way through images. In your experience, you believe that empathy is linked to creativity and intuition. Now, I mean, I can understand in Jaynes's model where you have a close societal group, how that may be the case, but have you found that to always be the case with complete strangers and situations that we could think of as just being so tragic as to be horrible? And, you know, who even wants to think about it, let alone connect with it?
Well, I feel like the things that are horrible are lacking in empathy. So, yeah, I mean, for me, the way I experience intuition and creativity, it is about empathy. It's about connection. It really is. Looking at a piece of art gives you, it hits you with a feeling. You either like it or you don't, but you usually come away with some form of emotion or a thought, but you in some way are affected. To create art is to generate that kind of feeling in some way, because it's tactical. You can't create anything with a body without in some way feeling something, right?
Right.
In the process. And then the result of your effort becomes a visual specimen. And so, you know, I'm not sure if I'm answering or if I even understand exactly what you mean, but I think that you could be psychic but not have any empathy.
Well,
intuitive and instinctually intuitive and use fear to get you information like when to rob a bank at what time or whatever, and, you know, or something else that might be harmful to other people, and not be able to feel, but it sure will make other people feel.
I guess I understand what you're saying there, where I was going right this minute. Everything that you see in the media is all about the tragedy in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my lovely wife can't, I mean, she will not even watch anything that mm-hmm. comes on the news, or she has to turn away from it. It impacts her that mm-hmm. strongly. And which is, of course, you know, so my question really had to do with how you could possibly do a reading for someone who had experienced that level of a tragedy when you truly are empathic.
Well, I can tell you this, and I really did want to dedicate this time that we had together to Newtown, because that's a town very close to us. And I've lived in Connecticut for about 13 years, and I know Newtown well. I know people in Newtown. My son goes to Newtown every weekend for some activities he likes to do, and I am stricken to the core, because we would be the world over, right? Anything like this that happened anywhere would hit us all pretty much. I don't know. I trust that. I'm very spiritual about this. I mean, I trust that if I were to be asked to read for someone, then that person was sent to me. Or if I couldn't do it, I would have to say I can't do it. You know, I wouldn't know until that moment, really. But I trust that. I don't believe that that anyone would be sent to me that it shouldn't be. But I relate to Rav, you know, and her feelings about it, but I, at the same time, I look out the window and it's just a few miles up the road, you know. So I am crushed. I'm just so crushed by it. So I do want to dedicate our time together here to the blessing and healing of everyone involved, you know, and the children especially, and the parents who went to pick up their children and were the ones who did not get to welcome their children back into their arms. That's something I don't know if I can't even deal with that.
No, nor can I, Elaine.
But I do believe that intuition is that core that brings us to who we really are, and that's why everyone is so touched by, you know, the children that were taken were that age that I just described, you know, can go into that magical realm so easily. Mm-hmm. They are magic. They are in that. They haven't reached the age of reason yet. Their gift to the whole planet is being in that beautiful, unconditional, trusting, magical place. And the loss and recognition more so of that beautiful place, I think, is what's bringing everyone together. To our core, we are intuitive, and we are that which they showed us. We are magical. We are creators. We're innocent. And, you know, so that's the gift that they give us. And I'm just sorry that we had to, you know, experience this, because it doesn't make any sense for life.
At some point, we're all children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that's another subject and beyond the scope of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this. I mean, we'll take a phone call or two and let you, you know, demonstrate some of your skills here in just a minute. But you submitted some questions, and one of them, you know, got my attention. So what is this kaleidoscope vision that you had?
I really wanted to tell you about it. I think I've chatted about it on the chat room or maybe mentioned it before, you know, and on the blog. I'm not sure. But, okay, now this is what starts to happen to me. I don't remember the first time, but a lot of the best, I guess, emotive and important messages, even though if I don't know what they even mean, come to me in the most relaxed state, either before falling to sleep or just when I've woken up, but I'm still in that blissful, relaxed state, but I am awake. And what has been coming to me, not all the time, but when it does, I'm so amazed, is imagery that is, and I call it, and I guess it's this term maybe out there, it's sacred geometry. It's literally like looking at a kaleidoscope. And it is breathtakingly beautiful, geometric shapes that fit together in a way as to make you feel ecstasy. And I look at this, and every time it's very different. And then it'll turn slowly, like an animation almost. And as it turns, all the pieces change into a whole other dynamic. And then they zoom through me. Or I'm not sure, maybe I'm flying through it. But it is so powerfully beautiful to me. And I start to think, what am I being told? What is this that's happening when this is happening? And I realize that, you know, we think of ourselves as being on this timeline, and we do learn that way. We do. We mature at different levels, and we have different things that happen. And as we grow, we have to release some of those things, you know, in order to move ahead and all that. So, but I have this wonderful feeling that actually everything is not like that. It isn't like past, present, future. Really, it's a kaleidoscopic thing. So that at each moment, we all have everything we need in order to shift into the next moment. And then you have everything you need again. But what we tend to do is think of, I lack something, so I'm not complete. Or I've been injured, so I can't be whole. And in fact, we have all the pieces because we're a part of that kaleidoscope. We have all the pieces we need every moment. And I don't know if I'm making sense. It's hard to put Perfect. Words to it. But it, boy, does it feel amazing! And I had this. It was just felt great when I realized we don't know how this stuff works at all. You know, you could have something work out for you beautifully, and you didn't know about it the day before, so it didn't exist to you on your timeline of understanding the world. Maybe it's really a kaleidoscope. Maybe right. We call in what we need, and it's all there, and we just have got it wrong.
Well, the mathematician would basically tell us that. You know, geometry is sacred, and maybe it's the
really
language
is.
Of God. Let's do this. I've got some questions out of the chat room. We've got some phone calls. Let's take a caller. We have a caller that's been very patient, been on the line for over a half an hour now. So let's go to line two. And Maggie is in she's in Michigan. Where in Michigan are you? Escanaba?
That is perfect.
It is. I got lucky. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Maggie. And what is your question today?
Well, is there a way that this particular, like, drawing or whatever that could be done or I could figure out how to get rid of sugar addiction?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, you know what? When this book comes out, and it won't be out until 2014 with Beyond Words, I'm hoping to have it all, which I love Beyond Words, yay, because they love, you know, this kind of topic, and they're supportive of this mind-body-spirit exploration. But I'm mm-hmm. hoping that the book will help everyone be able to go into the method, and it's similar to some of what Eldon covers in his recent book, because it's really a meditation. It's sort of self-hypnosis, really. But what if you just did this? What if you just did this? And you can contact me after the show, and we can, you know, relate more about it. But what if you went and you take a blank piece of paper, and in your own words, you ask for whatever image that, you know, to come through that would most help you understand this thing, and close mm-hmm. your eyes. I use the opposite hand than my dominant hand. So I would draw with my left hand.
Okay.
Close your eyes, draw with your opposite hand, breathing and feeling calm, and just draw, and then open your eyes and take as long as you need to gaze at the drawing. And anything that comes up in that drawing that you recognize, you might go, that looks like an apple, so write it down somewhere. That looks like, and you know, and keep going until all of your associations are there. It may be that the drawing doesn't look like it, anything in some area, but it reminds you of some feeling, so you got to write that feeling down. You just trust whatever comes. And, you know, and I relate to your question because, you know, like I said, each of these meditations that I do with clients, they have two chakra charts. And and all of us have, or I shouldn't say all of us, I know I have a sugar thing. I love sugar. I have a really hard time.
It's very bad for me because I'm actually diabetic, so that's worse.
Yeah, so you have to, you know, you have to do the thing that will help you not use it anymore.
Right.
You know,
and I believe that whatever comes up in the image will be a key to finding your way to why that's a problem. It could be just as genetic too. Yet there are other things that factor in.
Okay, Maggie. So I'll help you know, I'm going to interject here because Elaine's wonderful book isn't going to be out for a while, and if you're diabetic, you know, there's maybe some urgency here. We have a CD that has been very, very helpful for sugar addiction and for diabetes. Actually, there are a couple of them, and I'm going to see that they're sent to you. So before you get off the line, I mean, you're going to get put on hold, but don't go away. Don't hang up. Okay. Our producer, Joe, will get your details. It's a Merry Christmas gift, okay?
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, indeed, my pleasure. And you know, remember, I mean, you're dealing with something you've dealt with for a very, very long time, but down the highway, 30, 60 days from now, give me a call. Tell me how it worked for you.
I love your
stories, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maggie. Appreciate you being here. Elaine, you use our CDs as well.
I sure do, and I'm a proud affiliate.
You are?
I'm a proud affiliate of InnerTalk. Really, Sheldon, almost every time I do a reading, I ask people to go and look to see, because almost, you know, if everyone sees all that you offer, most of what happens in every reading is there is something that either represents maybe a fear or a time in life that needs to get unwound, you know, some event that happened years ago or whatever. Almost everyone, almost all of us have something to overcome in order to feel well or in order to move forward the way we want to. And so I feel like, you know, I really believe, I so much believe in what you do. And I actually have my favorite ones that I listen to. You know, I got one from myself, Soaring Self-Esteem. You know that one?
I don't know how you would need it, but hey, let's get it real quick.
Sure, I need it sometimes. I get down.
No, I
have the same things that go on in my mind as anyone, you know.
All right, let me get a real quick one here, and you're going to have to spit this one out in about 30 seconds. Kevin from the chat room wants to know, he loves to doodle. Can you comment on, is there anything about doodling?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I don't use the word doodle. So I'm not trying to be really controlling about what the words people use. But I always felt like it put people down for doing something that's really
Elaine, I'm going to ask you to go in the chat room and answer Kevin,
there.
Because we're just out of time. And I want you to tell everybody how to get you. How do they reach out? How do they find you? But you've only got 10 seconds.
Okay. You can go to Illuminara.com. That's my open sketchbook. And you can find me on Facebook, too. So it's illuminara.com.
All right. We've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank the wonderful team at Hay House Radio for making this show so easy to do. And, of course, a big thank you to all of you, and a happy holidays to all of you. And a special thank you to you, Elaine, for being our guest today. Now, until next time, remember, wherever you are, believing in yourself always matters.